Hey, football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown in the game, but his teammate scores instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you a second chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. With BetMGM's second chance offer, you have a chance to keep the fun going after the first player crosses the goal line. Try a first TD score wager with confidence today. BetMGM, make it legendary. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21 plus only. This specific promotional offer is not available in Mississippi, Pennsylvania, Puerto Rico, or Ontario. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 for New York. 1-800-NEXT-STEP for Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 for Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-ALL for Iowa. 1-800-981-0023 for Puerto Rico. Existing customer offer. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards paid back and unrestricted withdrawable funds. In partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
If you're the purchasing manager at a manufacturing plant, you know having a trusted partner makes all the difference. That's why, hands down, you count on Grainger for auto reordering. With on-time restocks, your team will have the cut-resistant gloves they need at the start of their shift. And you can end your day knowing they've got safety well in hand. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Army and fellow music fans, I'm Kayla.
And I'm Bethany, and we're the hosts of Standing BTS from the Consequence Podcast Network. We're a bi-weekly show that covers the impact and legacy of K-pop group BTS.
We mix the perfect blend of research and fangirl as we take a deep dive into lyrics during album reviews, theorize over music videos, and keep up with their current events.
No BTS topic is off limits. We welcome everyone into the conversation, whether you're a casual fan, committed ARMY, or someone who's just curious about one of the biggest music groups in the world.
Come chat with us every other Thursday with a new episode wherever podcasts are found.
Hey, I'm Nancy Wilson.
Mike Campbell.
Mark Mothersbaugh from Devo.
Hey, it's Adam from Counting Crows, and I am here giving you the story behind the song.
The story behind the song is back for season 4. I'm Peter Chotti of Deep Cuts Media, and this season we're diving even deeper into some of music history's most iconic tracks with the legends who made them.
What's so beautiful about it is a lot of people connect with, you gotta live your life and don't let the big man push you down. Don't have to live like a refugee, can't keep fighting for what you believe. And that was Tom.
From the spark of inspiration to untold tales from the studio, we unlock the true stories that shape the music you love.
At the time on the radio, there was a really cool riff by Nazareth covering a Joni Mitchell song, This Flight Tonight. It had the same groove, but I think Barracuda kind of blew it out of the water.
Join us as we all sit down with music icons like Devo, Heart, Mike Campbell of Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers, Sublime, Counting Crows, and so many more. New episodes are out now from the Consequence Podcast Network, so tune in wherever you get your podcast and join me for the story behind the song.
So you want to be a rock and roll star? No? Well, how about a podcast star? Well, as it turns out, there's a new all-in-one platform just for you. It's called Anchor, and it's the easiest way to make a podcast. And check this out, it's free. There's creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer, and then Anchor will distribute the podcast for you so it can be heard on Spotify and Apple Podcast and, you know, everywhere else in podcast land. And what's even better, you can actually make money from your podcast. Go figure. No minimum listenership on that. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. So go ahead, download the free Anchor app right now or go to anchor.fm to get started. So what are you waiting for? Podcast stardom is within your reach.
I'm Lior Phillips, host of This Must Be The Gig. We're a weekly podcast that documents everything about the world of live music. Speaking with choreographers, costume and set designers, the people who run beloved venues and festivals, and, of course, speaking with musicians about that one gig that changed their lives. Get your peek behind the curtain at consequenceofsound.net, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Consequence Podcast Network.
And welcome to another edition of Kyle Meredith with the interview series presented by WFPK at WFPK.org, Consequence of Sound, and the Consequence Podcast Network. First off, I'll, as usual, I want to say hello and thanks to you all who subscribe to the series, who check in every single week, listen to the multiple interviews. I always appreciate your comments. Thank you for doing that. Really, just thank you for listening. It's so appreciated these days. If you're not a subscriber, maybe, who knows, maybe you'll get inspired by the end of this to head over to one of the places where you can become a subscriber, which is really wherever you get your podcast from. That includes iTunes and Apple Podcast and Spotify and YouTube, Podchaser, Stitcher, Anchor, Acast, wherever you get your podcast from. Just type in Kyle Meredith with subscribe. We'll bring a new interview to you every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, because it's a great way to keep up with your favorite artists and discover new musicians and really just know what's happening in the music world. Again, that's Kyle Meredith with wherever you get your podcast from. And with that, hello, I am Kyle Meredith. Today, I'm going to be talking with Haim. I always love talking with this trio, one, because they're fun and they just kind of riff off of each other. It makes for a really fun interview, but also because they're one of my favorite bands. All three of their records so far have just been amazing, and we're going to get into that, especially how this third one kind of differs from the second one. A lot to do with studio confidence, that they'll tell you. The subconscious writing that plays a big part in a lot of these songs, the sisterhood that you hear in the single Hallelujah. And we'll also talk about citing influences within their writing. You know, I think I probably heard it on this record a little bit more than usual, but there are plenty of moments where you can listen in on the singles that have been out there and think, oh, I wonder if they took it from this spot. You know, a lot of folks have talked about Lou Reed, Walk on the Wild Side, and the influence that it brought to the first single, Summer Girl. So we're going to get into that one and the sound of this record. Being sonically in the room was a big hope that they had when they went into recording this time around. So I want to hear about that as well. And the relationship with director Paul Thomas Anderson. He's been doing a lot of their music videos lately. You'll also get the story behind that one. So without further ado, let's get into it. It's Kyle Meredith with Haim. It's been so great hearing all of these songs that are leading to this new record with Women of Music Part 3. You know, I've been a fan since the beginning, but there's something about this set that is whole next level. So I'll just throw this out there as a congratulations. I love what you all are doing right now.
Thank you.
Wow. Starting it out on a high note, Kyle. I'm really loving this. I'm already so in it, if you will.
I have to overcompliment you because my questions just go downhill after that. That's, you know, it's...
Okay, I'm ready, Kyle.
I do want to ask, the, you know, the difference, it does feel like the setup is a lot different between this record and where you all started with the second record, because I think around that second album, the sophomore record, you all were talking a lot about the pressure of having to write songs, and I don't know if writer's block was a part of it, but I sort of got that feeling that it was there. If that's correct, that doesn't seem to be there this time. Is that a fair assessment?
I don't know. I think the difference between our last album and this album is the freedom with technology, just being able to, you know, with streaming and stuff, like just being able to release something kind of on a whim. And I think that's what we kind of did with Summer Girl. That was the first song that we released with this new batch of music. And it was, we had never done something, released a song where we had just kind of wrote it, recorded it, and then essentially released it within like 2 weeks. And I think that process really was inspiring to us, and we kind of ran with it.
Which, by the way, that song right there, a complete anthem for that summer too. It's the groove of it. We all fell in love with it so quickly. And then, you know, the next songs come out and you get Now I'm In It, which, you know, sounds like an upbeat song until you start hearing about what you all are talking about, the stories behind it and everything. And I think that comes along to, you know, in the interviews that you have done so far, the words most personal record keep coming out. And I was wondering, what does it mean to call this the most personal record? Like what sets it apart from the first two in that way?
I think it just comes from, you know, confidence. I think this is our third record, our third time around the sun when it comes to putting out records. And I think this record especially, we're now so confident being in the studio. It's like it's second nature to us now. It's like you just go in there and you feel comfortable with opening up about things that you've never really opened up about before. And that's kind of what we went into doing this record.
You know, I hit that song too with Now I'm In It, because as I mentioned, it comes on, you're like, oh man, what a cool little rock song and everything. And then you do dip into it. And
And I think depression is one of the words that comes up. And Danielle, maybe this is pointed towards you. And it's not to say that none of you all will ever feel depression again, obviously. But does having a document like this song, does that help your future selves in any way?
I do think, I mean, listen, I feel like writing songs are very therapeutic. I feel like a lot of artists talk about that, but, you know, I think even while we were writing it, and a lot of times when we're writing songs, we're talking about these words just kind of come out of thin air, and at least for us when we're writing, I feel like these kind of words just come from somewhere. And at the moment we wrote it, I wasn't like, you know what, this is going to be a song about this. It was just very spur of the moment. And I feel like with a lot of our songs, that happens where you're writing these words and it's kind of like you're a fortune teller. Like in a couple months, you're like, wait, holy shit. I was really dealing with a lot of shit. And what I wrote about a couple months ago or years ago, like this, it's kind of playing out in real life. And I think with that specifically, it did kind of help me realize what was going on when I was writing it. I was like, you know what? I'm in it. I'm really fucking just deep in this feeling. And I think writing songs for us is therapeutic in that way.
By the way, the video for that, that's like, a third of a second? Rostam's sitting at the bar, right? I didn't imagine that. The Rostam is there.
Yeah. And Ariel are in that video first. If you drink, you miss them.
Did they get paid scale for that? Is 1 second worth the paycheck?
Yeah.
They gave us a deal.
Yeah, but they're still getting royalties. Don't worry.
Mm-hmm. And I'll bring up Hallelujah as well.
That's Danielle's dog. Danielle's dog is freaking out. I'm so sorry.
Oh, it's okay.
Danielle and Alana need to go in a closet too.
I know. We need our own like closet isolation booth.
The All American ISO booth.
Yeah. Hallelujah. I want to bring it up too because what a gorgeous song there. It's obviously different than anything you all have put out before. You know, I have Musically Vulnerable written down here. Maybe it's because of that acoustic style, because it doesn't seem like the usual Haim song, which, you know, is great. Was it very different to write? Was it as different to write as it sounds to me like it sounds?
Hallelujah actually was one of the fastest songs we wrote on the record. I think that we'd been trying. I mean, I think it's no secret that me and my sisters, we love each other. I mean, we fight, but we love each other. But I think we always kind of wanted to write a song about being sisters, being family, and being very appreciative. So I think the words were always kind of there, but we never really sat down to write them. And that song actually was written differently. Like we wrote our verses, you know, not quietly. It was very much like each verse was written by each sister. And, you know, it's not like we were like, oh, does this sound good? It was kind of like we sat in silence for a little bit and wrote the verses and then kind of the class after like an hour, and it kind of came together that way. And I think that's why you can kind of feel, I mean, it's a very emotional song, and it was super emotional to record. I mean, I was like crying through the whole process. My verse on the record is like the only pass that I did without like hysterically crying, so that made it home.
That says anything.
But yeah, it was a really beautiful thing to write that song and then record it, and I was really happy when it came out.
Well, I will say, you know, I know you all are, you know, not afraid of a cover throughout the years, and I think one of the most fun things, one of the most fun things I feel like of being a fan of you all is hearing a new song and sort of trying to hunt a little bit for what the cover would be to match it. What maybe the influence, you know, if you want to use that word or something like that. Like when I heard Hallelujah, the guitar part sounds a little bit, it reminds me of Blues Run the Game. Whereas Now I'm In It, there's a Savage Garden thing, you know, going on there. And I think, you know, Summer Girl, a lot of people you know, have talked about with Lou Reed and Walk on the Wild Side as well. And that's the thing, like, is that something that you all kind of step out on and say, oh, I would love to write a song that sounds like Walk on the Wild Side or anything like that? Or is that something that kind of creeps up on you all as well?
Well, I think with Summer Girl, it was definitely, I kind of came up with this do-do-do part, which obviously when I went into the studio with Rostam and I was kind of explaining like, hey, I think, you know, I also think with Summer Girl, it's not like a traditional song. It doesn't all like hit you over the head with like a melodic part. It's just kind of this grooving thing. So I remember showing it to him, and he was like into it from the jump. But until I was like, I feel like this part is kind of like a Lou Reed Walk on the Wild Side kind of. It reminds me of that. Then he was like, wait a second, and started putting, you know, like stand up bass on it, and really kind of going for a Walk on the Wild Side sonic kind of palette. And I think at that point I was like, wait, this is really working. Is this weird? Like, you know, and I think I'm just such a big fan of music that, you know, from samples and stuff, referencing or taking from old songs and putting it into new ones, that I was like, you know what, let's just fucking go for it. Like, why not? But I'm obviously such a huge fan of Lou Reed, and he reached out to his estate. He has, you know, he has a writing credit, and we just kind of went for it because I feel like at this point it's cool just to reference songs that you love.
Oh, absolutely. And again, it sort of adds a different dimension even to as the listener, you know, which is fun. You know, it's sort of like how people would hide stuff in artwork, you know, and stuff like that. Kind of gives that extra.
Yeah, you know, I mean, like, there's no, with that song, it's not like there's any melody that's the same as the original, but it definitely, you know, the production definitely harkens back to that, and so it's important to recognize that, I think, and be, yeah.
Oh, which, by the way, the line "walk beside me, not behind me," we use that all the time around the house now. It's one of my, you know, for various different reasons too. We keep multi-purposing that line right there. I love it.
Thank you.
I love that.
And
we'll get you a t-shirt that says it. We'll get that to you.
I would love that.
We'll figure that out.
Absolutely.
We'll up our merch game. That's a great idea for merch, and we'll credit you.
Thank you. And to keep further the over complimenting, as I promised, the sound of the drums on this record, the sound of the guitars, you know, even on the new single with the steps and everything, it's so cool because it almost sounds raw and sometimes accidental when you could tell, you know, maybe it's obviously not or anything, but however you all captured this, I love it. And that's, I guess I'll put it in question form too. Are you all doing something
Thank
different
you.
With all of that that you hadn't done before? Because I guess that really hadn't stood out to me like that before.
Yeah, I think, you know, sonically, we really wanted it to sound like we're kind of in the room a lot. And I mean, I'm sure you know, like, it's very hard for recorded instruments, at least for us, it's been really hard to sonically pinpoint things that, like, unique to us and also super raw. I feel like it's actually really hard to sonically get that in the studio and make it not sound like slick or obviously I feel like we just used a shit ton of room mics, like, you know, we wanted shit to sound super airy, and it's like kind of trial and error getting that sound, but we really wanted to sound raw. But yeah, it weirdly takes a long time to get something to sound like that, at least in our experience. But we realized that you got to use a lot of room mics, and yeah, that's what we've kind of figured out.
A lot of singing in the bathroom.
Oh.
That's where you get the best sounding vocal takes.
Yeah.
But yeah, Danielle played all the drums on the record. I don't know if you knew that. I mean, she's played drums on literally every one of our records. But I think a lot of that also just comes from, you know, my sister's got finesse, man. She knows how to play those. She knows how to play those drums.
Yeah, that's in the latest video, too. That's how it ends, right? Just going off on the drums right there at the end.
Yeah. A lot of, like, ringy snares on this album. Kind of open, ringy, not very tight-sounding snares.
Yeah. It looks like a big cathartic moment. And I should bring up I know we're coming at the end of this time-wise, but I want to bring up the videos, too, because, you know, you guys are once again working with Paul Thomas Anderson on these. And I thought, it really harkens back, you know, as we are all growing up to the era, the MTV era, where big directors are always used for the music videos. I do love that even if it's out of convenience or friendship, that you all are keeping that tradition alive in a certain way. But what is
Thank
the reason?
You.
Why do you all keep going back to him time and time again? Is there any specific reason?
I mean, is it even a question?
Yeah, I mean, Paul is Paul. He's a genius.
He's a genius. And he's, like, so much fun to work with. And, like, we honestly, like, we kneel at the temple of Paul Thomas Anderson. Like, he's so
Yeah,
brilliant.
I think as a musical artist, it's kind of hard. I mean, like, no, it's hard to find. I mean, music videos are so crazy to begin with. It's like when we first started making, I mean, our first video forever we did with our friend, and we did it for like $200, and we were just riding around. We were just like, oh, let's just ride around on some like mopeds, you know, and it's, as much time as you spend on, at least for us, like recording like these songs and spending so much time like trying to get your vision out onto tape for an album, like we've on our first album, we would make these music videos in like one day and not really have that much time to even think about it. So, you know, music videos are really, they can be really hard. So obviously when we just feel so lucky to be working with Paul, because we feel like we're just in such great hands, and it's really, yeah, it's been really amazing.
Well, I love seeing what you all come up with, and beyond the visuals, obviously I'm talking about the music too. Wimna Music Part 3, everything that I've heard so far sounds amazing. And it's always so much fun talking to you all. You all are a blast for an interview. So thank you for taking the time to do this.
Man.
And thank you for the music.
Thank you. Hopefully we'll see you next time we play Bonnaroo.
So absolutely. We'll make it happen.
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
Awesome.
Amazing.
You all take care. Thank you so much.
All right. Bye. All right.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
Now, it was back in 2013, the first time that I ever got to meet the Higham sisters, which were well on their way to ruling the world at that point, especially following up their South by Southwest 2012 gig, a show that I was actually at. The show that they talked about was sort of the life-changing moment during that South by Southwest trip. So here we are talking backstage at Bonnaroo, thus all the wind noise and everything. You'll have to excuse the mics on this one. I got the scoop on their history, getting named BBC Sound of 2013, and how it affects their dating life even. Plus, they even sang some of Santana's Maria Maria. So part two of Higham.
One, two, three.
It's Kyle Mann at the Weekly Feed. We're at Bonnaroo. I've got the ladies from Higham here. Woo! Welcome to Bonnaroo.
Yeah!
I actually can't believe we're here.
Is that true?
Yeah. Yeah.
Why this one?
Well, no, because it's like a rock and roll bucket list thing,
that's
I think,
true.
For us. And I think it was always kind of a dream.
Yeah.
First of all, Danielle already played it.
Who did you play?
Yeah.
It?
I played with Jenny Lewis
right?
4 years ago.
Yeah.
So for us, it was kind of like, well,
what? We gotta catch up.
Played it.
Gotta now, catch up.
You gotta catch up.
Yeah.
So it was always kind of like, oh, come on, dude, we'll get there. And now that we're here, it's kind of the craziest
sure.
thing.
I mean, you guys have, first off, for what you guys have accomplished, and we should probably do the usual kind of story here, but what you guys have accomplished without having a full-length debut out, just off the singles out there, off the EPs out there, it's kind of, I mean, it's amazing.
Thank you.
It's amazing. This day and age, so much music in the world, right? I mean, so much music, and to actually kind of cut through that has got to mean that there's something special going on, and I think that's proved itself.
You're going to make me cry.
I'm really emotional today.
This is your Barbara
really
Walters interview.
Emotional.
I'm only going to cry. Yeah.
Good. No, it's allergies.
Right to my heart.
Yeah.
God.
Well, there's some fun stories because, you know, so you had the family band when you were young. You had to miss. There's a story about someone missing Coachella and throwing a big fake at a gig.
Oh, yeah. This is like yearly standing
sure.
gig anniversary. And it's always the weekend of Coachella. Yeah. So every year we couldn't go.
So 16-year-old Essie was really bummed out.
Yeah.
16-year-old Essie was just bummed in general, but really not being able. Oh my God!
That's the rain.
That's
oh
the rain.
My God! That's the rain.
Alanis Morissette said this is lucky.
16-year-old Essie is coming out.
Yeah, this was my what my mind looked like at a 16-year-old.
Well, you know, I mean, Bonnaroo, you get one thing: you get the mud bowl or the dust bowl. It's part of it.
Oh
the show
God.
Goes on. So you guys, it's gonna be you're gonna have your glycerine moment here.
We're not really used to this. Either a mystery moment or our blind melon moment. No rain.
That's right.
See?
Well done.
Took it even
I see what you
back.
Did there.
See what I did there?
There is someone playing here. You guys probably aren't going to stay the whole time. You got other gigs?
I know. We have to go.
Yeah. And Tom Petty's playing Sunday night.
Oh, there's just this guy.
Yeah.
You know.
I don't want to hear it. Don't.
There's something that comes around, and there's a come around. So you guys have had to deal with the new band comparisons. There's always like the Fleetwood Mac thing. So you got Tom Petty, and Tom says, "Hey, come up here and sing the Stevie Nicks part." Do you do
oh
it?
Oh my God!
Yes.
Do you do
if
it?
If Tom Petty said, "Go jump off a bridge," I would do it.
Yeah.
Are you kidding? I would do anything Tom Petty asked.
Yeah. If Tom Petty called, would you answer?
I probably would. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't sing with him. I mean, I don't have the chops that you have.
Oh,
but, you know.
I feel like if Tom Petty looked you in the eye and said, "You need to sing right now," I feel like. The gods would just, you would literally turn into...
Baby Blues?
Oh, yeah.
How can you deny?
That's true.
You know? I think you would literally turn into Placido Domingo.
Yeah.
And just,
it
would just be like
it's
a really...
It's almost like being knighted, you know?
Yeah.
Like, and here you go.
Yeah. Tom Petty says, you gotta go, and then
a
that's
boy
what
can
happens.
Hope, you know? Yeah, you guys are close
Sunday.
To it.
Sunday. I know you're gonna be like right up against...
Be up there.
Like right up against the...
I'll do the Stevie Nicks parts for you. I'll even throw a fist up in the air for you because of tribute, you know?
Stop dragging my...
So January rolls around, you win The Sound of 2013.
Pretty crazy.
Which is huge. I was just talking to last year's winner, Michael Kiwanuka.
Oh, yeah.
Was he here?
Not here. This was at South By. We were talking. I pointed over there.
Yeah,
I
think that's Texas. Have it there.
I think that's Texas.
Yeah.
But he was talking about, like, that really does change your life, like, overnight. Like, they had to prep him and everything. Like, listen, this is going to come out tomorrow and your life's going to change. Did that happen with you guys at all?
No.
I mean, he lived in England for once, so.
Yeah, we lived in LA, and by then we were already back in LA. We had just finished the fourth course machine. Yeah. And we were kind of, I don't know.
It definitely wasn't a life changer. Well, what happened was, like, since we were recording and, like, all the, they had stand-in Haims do some stuff in England while we were recording.
They found lookalikes.
They found lookalikes.
Yeah, so kind of, honestly, we kind of were, like, so shocked by it.
Yeah.
It didn't change our lives. It kind of just, like, lit a fire under our butts and just keep working and keep going for it. It was never, like, a thing, like, let's sit on our laurels and bask in the glory. It was like, okay, let's work 3 million times harder. Yeah,
really. But that is cool because you did do it without the full length, and I'm not sure that matters as much these days that you do have the full length. And obviously, you know, it doesn't matter as much, it seems like. But so that's something you guys are working on.
Yeah.
So you did the EPs, and there was this time, this amount of space that you did, you know, whatever the reason was. So what was the reason? You do the EPs, and now this amount of time. Is it because you signed at Columbia, and they're saying, you know, we got to craft it a certain way?
We just did not expect any, like, really, like, anything really from the EP. We had been a band for 6 years, you know, playing our own songs all around LA, and nothing was really going on. So when we made the EP, we kind of were like, okay, this is kind of like, we hadn't really released anything before, really. We just had stuff streaming on our MySpace for 6 years.
Which we didn't want to release.
We never, like, officially, like, released, which release means give it to our friends on Facebook.
Right, we did,
you know? So, you know, looking back, maybe we should have recorded more songs during the span of time when we recorded the EP. We really didn't expect.
I mean, as you say, like, I guess records, there's, like, albums, I guess, aren't as popular. But to us, I mean, I've always been a record kind of person. Like, there's some records that you can listen to backwards from, like, start to finish.
Sure.
And it's, like, a whole, like, that's what I want our record to be like. I wish, and we got... everything kind of happened so quickly, and like we got offered all these amazing tours. And what we love to do is tour automatically. Like, it doesn't matter, like, if I can tour, I will tour until my fingers bleed. Like, I don't care. But so when someone's like, hey, do you want to go on tour with Florence and the Machine? You're kind of not like, no, I'll pass. I'll actually take the back seat on that one.
We freaked out.
We freaked out. You can't say no
to
that. She's a goddess.
Just runs around in that dress with the voice belting out.
Yeah. And on top of everything, she's also like the downest chick ever.
Oh, yeah. She's a goddess.
The coolest girl ever. And so much fun to hang out with and like really fun and like likes having dance parties backstage.
So you guys actually get like all of the prep and everything, the do's and don'ts before you even have to properly introduce yourself to the world. Like, you have all of these people that you are, they're taking you on tour, and it's like, hey, here are the ropes, kids. Not that you exactly needed them. I mean, you guys have a history.
Yeah. I mean, like, we've played music together since we were babies.
Right.
But being able to be on tour with, like, Florence and Julian and Mumford and Sons has just been, like, for us, it's mostly
been a party.
So speaking of the history, I don't want to be a, you know, kind of a history lesson interview, but you were once signed to Columbia. You know, there was another band and everything.
Back in the day.
Right. Now, for something like that, an entirely different sound, is that at this point kind of like, you know what, is that something you're trying to escape? Or is it something you kind of try to sweep under the rug, like, this is so completely different?
No, not even, because we were so young when it happened, and it was such a short period of time, and I think that it was fun while it lasted, and we look back on it kind of like, oh yeah, that was like, you know, something fun that Danielle and I did, you know, for like a year, and then we realized that we really wanted to make our, you know, write our own music, really, that was like the big thing, and so we just kind of, we were like, okay, we'll try writing songs together, and we did, and it worked, and here we are now.
So how did that come about? Because you guys kind of came from, you know, growing up on classic rock and the Americana sound and everything, and that's obviously not what comes out of your music. Was there ever a point where you said, this is, we want this big rhythmic sound? We, you know, where does that come from within you guys to say that's, and to hear that that's what happened?
I think, well, all of our first instruments were the drums.
Yeah.
Okay.
Our dad's a drummer, so we learned drums when we were four, you know, each of us. I think that's kind of where our percussive element of our music comes. I mean, we love R&B, which is very percussive. We love Prince, who I think has his melodies as percussive. So I think it's just kind of, you know,
funk. It's yeah. all very...
I guess it's the whole thing about when you learn that, yeah, you know, anyone, you know, musicians were kind of raised on one sound, especially when they hit their teenage years and early 20s, that just becomes a defining sound. Oh, it's so easy to play blues riff, you know, or something like
right.
that.
Right.
To kind of turn around, I guess that's the interesting twist of where you guys came from to where you are now.
Well, yeah, I think that, but also, I mean, growing up, like Danielle said, our dad was on the drums when we were really, really young, but my mom was really into folk. When we were good kids, we got to listen to Top 40 radio.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there was...
It's a great thing. I have a kid. That would never, ever work. Like, I'm going to let you listen to the radio and say, I am going to jump on this couch.
I'm going to go on my iPad, Dad, right. So suck it.
No, my parents... Growing up, my parents didn't like Top 40 radio.
Yeah,
because, I mean, because all we wanted to listen to was, like, Tupac and Biggie and TLC and Destiny's
right.
Child. And, like, my parents just did not get that music. They got some of it.
Sure.
They liked some of it until, like, a bad word came
my
on.
My dad loved the newer Santana record. That
yeah, yeah. The Rob
right.
Thomas
yeah,
one.
Yeah, right, right, right.
That
was, like, the Top 40 thing where I was like, actually, Dad, I'll pass.
Yeah, yeah like, right. We don't have to listen to the radio,
I
actually.
I have to listen to Rob Thomas.
Still playing dozens of times a day. Somewhere.
Yeah,
I know.
Yeah.
I think I heard it in our hotel.
Yeah, right. We heard Maria Maria.
Maria Maria.
So. For versions
Maria
on the fly.
Was that still be?
Yeah. That was, yeah. My dad
so that was that,
yeah.
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 That happened. And Dad also liked Ricky Martin.
Dad loved Ricky
Martin. My dad
kind of seems like that
music.
Goes hand in hand, right?
Yeah. My dad loved Latin music.
Yeah. So what do we expect then from the full that we haven't already heard? Much of the songs on the EP, are they going to be on there?
Some
or is this
those,
kind
some
of a...
Of those,
yeah.
There's a lot of new songs that we wrote that we haven't played live yet. And then there's just some fun jams we've been playing live. It's kind of just party album.
Yeah.
Tyler's party album.
Well, so then with everything that's happened, and I got to ask about this when we're going to head into the personal life of one thing, because of an interview, you said, you know, all these songs about bad relationships.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
Now you're put out. Now you're put out, you know, out there. Does that make dating easier or more difficult?
I mean, really, our songs, like, I feel like a lot of our songs are an accumulation of a bunch of different stories. It's not like, this is the Bob song.
Yeah.
Sure,
like,
no, you don't have the Adele album.
Right.
Well, that's not bad. Yeah.
Sorry, Bob. Bob was the first first dude name that came into my brain.
Bob.
Yeah.
This is the Bob song.
Bob
Saget is going to be here.
You enjoyed the new season?
Maybe it's about Bob Saget.
Bob Saget is here.
Wow. Is he here today?
I know he's here on Sunday.
He went to high school with my mom.
Is that right?
No big deal.
Abington High School.
No big deal.
Yeah.
But yeah, we are very poetic.
We're very connected, apparently.
Us and Bob Saget?
I mean, he went to high school with mom.
And now you're here.
And now we're here.
Oh, no.
More connections than a telephone call.
Get your Danny Tanner fix while you're at it.
Oh my God. In my dreams.
Yeah.
Uncle Danny.
Cut it out. But yeah, on the personal note, yeah. We're very poetic with our...
Sure you are, and I guess that's the thing, and I don't mean to make that a kind of a gender issue at all.
No.
That goes with anybody that writes songs about relationships. Like, okay, you've gone from obscurity to a certain sense of fame, and now here's dating in a new light. Like, here's something like you have to actually worry about who you're going to wake up next to. You know.
I don't know if we're at that stage.
I don't know.
I don't think I'll ever be at the stage where people actually care who I'm dating.
Yeah.
I really don't think so, but...
Music's my boyfriend right now, though.
Music,
He's a good boyfriend.
Always there for me.
Lends an ear.
Sure.
You know?
Sure.
Fun to snuggle with. I'm always Big Spoon.
Can be angry when you need to be angry.
Spoon. Baby Spoon.
All right. I cannot wait to hear the debut. Seriously, that's later this year, right?
I can't wait for you to hear it either.
Later this year, okay. Okay, Chaim, thank you so much.
Yeah.
Done.
And my thanks to Chaim right there. Again, the new record due out this summer is called Women in Music Part 3. And thanks to you for checking out the episode. Again, I always appreciate it. If you're not a subscriber by this point, please do take that moment. iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, Stitcher, Podchaser, Anchor, wherever you get your podcast from, just type in Kyle Meredith With and hit subscribe. We'll bring new episode to you every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Great way to keep up with favorite artists and discover new musicians and know what's happening in the music world. After that, head to WFPK.org. That's where you hear me every Monday through Friday at 6 p.m. Eastern. It's an hour full of song premieres, music news, anniversary spins, and bonus interviews. Again, that's WFPK.org. Consequence of Sound has your music and film news. You can also find me on just about any social media platform at Kyle Meredith. I hope you like and follow along there. And that does it for another edition of Kyle Meredith. I'll see you next time.
Consequence Podcast Network.
Where are we in the world right now?
You're my second interview from a closet that I've ever done.
From a closet?
Oh my gosh.
So you were in a closet in Louisville, if that sounds scary. That's theoretically.
It's your ISO booth.
Oh. It's exactly it.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.
Hey, football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown in the game, but his teammate scores instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you a second chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown in the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. With BetMGM's second chance offering, you have a chance to keep the fun going after the first player crosses the goal line. Try a first TD score wager with confidence today. BetMGM, make it legendary. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21 plus only. This specific promotional offer is not available in Mississippi, Pennsylvania, Puerto Rico, or Ontario. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 for New York. 1-800-NEXT-STEP for Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 for Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-ALL for Iowa. 1-800-981-0023 for Puerto Rico. Existing customer offer. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards paid back and unrestricted withdrawable funds. In partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
If you're the purchasing manager at a manufacturing plant, you know having a trusted partner makes all the difference. That's why, hands down, you count on Grainger for auto reordering. With on-time restocks, your team will have the cut-resistant gloves they need at the start of their shift. And you can end your day knowing they've got safety well in hand. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.